Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, February 16th, 2019. This is episode 1566. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Hover. Register a domain name and build your online brand with Hover. Visit hover.com/twit to get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. It's time for our yearly TWiT survey. We'll get to the show in just a second, but I want to invite you, if you haven't yet taken the survey, to go to twit.to/survey19. We'd love to know more about you, both because it helps us get advertisers, but also because we'd like to know what shows to do next. We are thinking about that. In fact, that's the last question on the survey. We are not collecting personal information. Don't worry. This isn't about figuring out anything about you. It's just about knowing our audience better in aggregate. It is a big help for us, though. And we do this once a year. twit.to/survey19. Now, on with the show. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time for tech talk. Computers, the internet, home theater. We got your digital photography. We got your smartphones. We got your smartwatches. We got your augmented reality. You know, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. If you want to talk high tech, I'd love to talk high tech with you. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, you can still reach us. In fact, it'll still be toll free, but you have to use Skype out or something like that, you know, to call. Something that can call a phone number. 8888-ASK-LEO. Everything we talk about is on the website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. So I want you to go there. If you hear something and you don't want to write it down, you just go there and it'll all be there for you. See, that's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. Chat room. We have a great chat room going on during the show. I love this chat room because you know why? Because I feel like I've externalized my brain into the chat room. They've been listening for years. And so they know, you know, if I can't remember a product, if I can't remember something, I just say, hey, chat room. What was that thing? You know that thing we talk about? And they go, yeah, Leo, we know that thing. So it's a you know, they talk about in the future someday we'll be able to, you know, store our brains in jars or whatever it is in machines. And I've already done that. It's an awesome thing. I got the chat room. You know, and probably they could do the whole show without me, but I'm gonna still collect the check. I want to stay here. If you play Pokemon Go, of course you do. No, you don't. Do you play Pokemon Go? No, you do. Dad does. You do. All right. No, he says no. Okay, we have a difference of opinion here. Do you play Pokemon Go? No, I play. Okay, I'm gonna admit it. I play Pokemon Go. I like the Pokemon Go. But they're in trouble. The folks at Niantic, it's a Google company. These are the guys who did Google Maps originally. They thought, you know, this location stuff, we probably could do more with it. And they created a game. First, they created a game called Ingress. And they used what they knew from maps. So they actually have a map in the game. And then it started with, you know, things like the post office and landmarks. They become, you know, objects in the game that you have to take over, and people, different factions fight for it. And then on Pokemon Go, they took the same idea, the same maps, in fact, even the same locations. And on top of it, they put this kids game, started with a game, right? And then this cartoon called Pokemon. And so as you wander around, you see the U.S. post office. It's a Poke Gym. And in the gym are people's Pokemon defending it. And you can go in there and attack it, take it over, get rid of their Pokemon, put your Pokemon in there. And you get points for that and stuff like that. There's also little Pokemon wandering around. You've seen people. It's kind of a crazy thing. It started July 2016. And for a few months then, way back when, all you'd see is people. I remember going down to San Diego We were in Coronado, and there's a big grassy median strip as you go down, you know, the King's Way in Coronado. And it was like Woodstock. It was jammed with people. We said, what's going on? They're playing Pokemon. See, there were this one median strip had two gyms at either end and a bunch. Oh, there's another thing called Pokestops, which are just places you can collect goods. And there was one spot that had, like, just by accident, I guess, randomly, two Pokestops and Pokegyms. What's weird is as a human, you look at it, and it's just a median strip or a post office or a church or a sculpture. But in the world of Pokemon, it's something else. There's an it's called augmented reality. There's another layer of reality. It's augmented on top of it. And so when you look in the game, you see the map, you see the streets, but you also see, you don't see the post office. You see a Pokegym. You don't see the bust of Lincoln. You see a Pokestop. And it's good. And so you wander around. And the good thing about this game, and I think Niantic has said that something like several billion miles have been walked by players, because you have to walk around. You can't drive. You can't go over, I think, 4 miles an hour. So you could run. You could bicycle if you bicycle slowly. You can't really drive unless you want to drive 4 miles an hour, which is no fun. So you have to walk. And so this is great. It's getting families are out there playing the game. They're walking around. But there's a little problem. There's, of course, trouble in paradise. By the way, get ready, because this whole Pokemon mania is about to get done over sometime this year. Niantic and Warner Brothers are going to release a new version of this game. Same idea, map, places and stuff. It's going to be Harry Potter. Harry Potter. It's going to be Harry Potter. Does that excite you? No? Okay. It's Harry Potter. You like Harry Potter? Yeah, you like Harry Potter. Yeah, okay. What if instead of Pokestops, Pokegyms, and Pokemon, it was fantastical creatures, and it was magical places, and instead of throwing a ball to catch the creatures, you were using your magic wand and casting Expecto Patronum, a spell, and you would catch the creature. What do you think? Yeah, okay. So that's going to be, I'm telling you, Pokemon Go, nothing. You're going to see mobs on the median strip again. So a bunch of homeowners filed lawsuit against Niantic because players were congregating on or near private property, because these private property was gyms or Pokestops. There were places the players wanted to see. Now, Starbucks pays money. Every Starbucks in the country, probably in the world, right? Every Starbucks in the world is a Pokestop because it's good for business. Players go there, they sit there, have a cup of coffee. Every 5 minutes you get new stuff from the Pokestop, so they stick around. I know I prefer restaurants that have multiple Pokestops nearby. Because then I'm, it's a sad, sad addiction. I apologize. But anyway, Niantic got in a little bit of trouble because not everybody wants people hanging around. I remember I was playing Pokemon Go. Where was I? I can't remember. But somebody came up to me and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm playing Pokemon Go. He said, yeah, I knew it. He said, he has a shop. Right. And at a shop or the parking lot somewhere around the shop is a gym and a Pokestop. He said, people keep driving up. They park in my parking lot. They play the game and then they leave all the time, constantly. That's what they're doing, huh? Yeah. I said, yeah, they're catching creatures. He said, well, they don't shop in my store. They just fill up space in the parking lot. And therein lies the problem. So it was a class action lawsuit. There were apparently many lawsuits filed when this came out. Residents like the Villas of Positano, an oceanfront condo in Hollywood, Florida, who woke up early in the morning hours to hundreds of players, quote, behaving like zombies, walking around, bumping into things. Literally, we're redefining the meaning of trespass in the digital age, because when you're playing these games, you're not looking at the Villas of Positano. You're looking at a gym, a Pokemon gym. Now, Pokemon Go in the game says, do not trespass while you're playing this game. So, and the theory is that they only pick public spots for these gyms and stops, like post offices. But sometimes it's a parking lot of a business. Sometimes it's near a business, but not in the business. So many lawsuits, they have been now settled. On Thursday, a bunch of homeowners submitted a proposal settlement for review by a California federal judge. If the deal gets the judge's blessing, and it's expected it will, Niantic, the creators of this game, will become much more legally responsible for the Pokemon that roam around and are visible to everybody but those using the mobile app. Niantic apparently agreed to settle. Niantic is pledging, upon complaints of nuisance or trespass and demands of the removal of a Pokestopper gym, this is in the U.S. courts, actually the state courts, the company will make commercially reasonable efforts to resolve the complaint and communicate a resolution with 15 days. In other words, they'll close the stop. Owners of single-family residential properties get the rights of removal within 40 meters of their properties. Niantic will maintain a database of complaints in an attempt to avoid poor placement. When Niantic's system detects a raid of more than 10 players, yeah, you can get 20 players in one of these things, congregating, a warning message will appear on their screen saying, hey, be nice, okay? Just be courteous, respectful. You know, really, this is smart because here comes Harry Potter and you ain't seen nothing yet. I'm just warning you, if you see zombie-like groups of people in front of your building or your business, just understand they're not bad people. They're just Pokey-addled, or in this case, Potter-addled. They'll move on. Plaintiffs wanted awards of $1,000 apiece for all property owners or renters within 100 meters of a Pokestop. $8 million in attorney's fees, of course, $130,000 in expenses. Looks like that'll be settled. So if you've got a strange bunch of people congregating in front of your business, now you know why. And now you know your long national nightmare is almost over until Harry Potter comes out, and then all bets are off. Maybe I should take a call.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how you're going to answer this, because I felt like this is one I could answer offline, but I don't want to give the wrong
information. Don't start answering calls for me.
Some
and
of them
what
were
would
so
I do?
Easy. I'm like, why do you need to wait an hour and a half?
Yeah, you could do that
but,
if you just want to. Yeah.
Ray in Swansea, Massachusetts wants to know if he could dual boot a Windows 10 machine and run Mac too, but I don't think you can.
No, you're right.
Because Apple is so proprietary. There's
right.
no way they would let their software on a Windows machine, but that's just...
That's just me.
That's just me. That's what
that's
I
just
thought.
Me, she that says.
That was my opinion.
Kim Schaffer. Ding, 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 ding. You are right.
I'm priming to take over your gig. At
$10 coming your way. But there is another
you could,
side
you could do
to
it
this
the
story.
Other way.
That, oh, you are so good.
Parallels. I've done it.
Yep. You can go the other way. Hi, Ray. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Hi. How are you?
I am well. Thank you, Kim. So it was Kim accurate? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, that's what I'm asking. I've had a Mac laptop, 2012 MacBook Pro, that doesn't charge all the time. Every once in a while it charges. So I went to upgrade, but I didn't want to spend the $3,000 upgrade. I bought Asus laptop instead.
Right. A lot of people do that. Very common.
Yeah. Right. It's 4K. It's high definition and all that stuff.
Yeah. Because it's half the price of Apple hardware. Pretty much the same, by the way, pretty much the same hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the problem. Apple doesn't sell Mac OS.
Right.
It comes with a Mac, but they don't offer it, and there's no way to legitimately, and there's the underscore that, legitimately
okay.
to get it. There is something called a Hackintosh. This is this would be a violation of Apple's terms of service, but people do it all the time. The reason I don't recommend it is... I mean, you could if you Google Hackintosh, you'll find ways to put a Mac OS on your Asus.
Okay.
But you can't do any updates because if you do, the chances are it'll get broken. It takes a lot of extra work. Most people, you can easily put Windows on a Mac because Microsoft sells Windows standalone. Mac hardware is basically PC hardware. Apple provides the drivers. They don't mind if you want to do that. They allow both dual booting and you can also use a virtual machine. But there's no way to get Mac OS. So the only way you can get Mac OS is to either own a Mac or know somebody who does, get the Mac OS from them, and then modify. You have to do a lot of hacking around to get
a lot of
work.
Well, yeah. My MacBook will occasionally charge, and I can turn it on every once in a while.
How old is he? If the MacBook's, I mean, you can always take that.
2012.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's worth keeping going because, honestly, Intel hasn't really changed much since 2012. Bring it to the Apple store. They'll put a new battery in it.
I did. It's not the battery. They said it was $900 to fix.
Oh, forget about it.
Well, I don't want to do that.
No.
And that's why I bought the other machine. In that case, I'd probably be better off buying a Mac Mini.
Yeah. That's not a bad idea. Mac Mini's less than $900.
Right.
And then you could do Windows on that. Actually, Mac Minis are a pretty good, deal. They've released new ones. Or you could use Windows, which isn't the end of the world. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru, coming up.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
He's our home theater geek and joins us each week to talk about big screen televisions, surround sound, Dolby Atmos. And you've been to the movies this week.
Yeah, this week I want to talk about commercial cinema. I just went and saw Alita Battle Angel.
So whenever a movie comes out in February, just a little tip, it's almost always terrible because, in fact, this is a good example. They were thinking we'll release it in the Christmas season when more people of an age to see this will see it. But they realized it was so bad. They weren't interested in the Oscar consideration. So it's usually a bad sign. Either the summer where the kids can go see it, or Thanksgiving and Christmas time
for Oscar. February,
that usually means bad movie. Now this one's based on a Japanese anime or manga series, right? Yeah,
a manga series. Yes, called Gunnm, Gunnm.
Very popular with the young folk.
Indeed. It's got many, many chapters or many books in the manga series. And James Cameron, he of Titanic and Avatar fame, optioned this story like 10 years ago. He really wanted to do this story. But he got so wrapped up in what I've heard are 4 Avatar sequels. which are now 10 years. I mean, Avatar came out, I think it was 2009.
It got a lot of acclaim when it came out.
It did.
It wasn't one of those movies where it had legs, There's some movies that get a lot of acclaim and then people continue to watch them and love them. I don't feel like Avatar became that.
I suppose not. And yet Cameron somehow has a contract to do multiple sequels and he's working on them so hard apparently that he couldn't do this other project that he really wanted to do. So he finally, after 10 years, handed it off to Robert Rodriguez, and
who is an amazing director,
known
for his kind of crazy violent low budget movies.
I think he did Once Upon a Time in Mexico,
The
Desperado series, but he also did Spy Kids.
Which was great for kids.
So I went to this movie mostly to see the technology. I mean, I didn't know whether the story would be good or bad, and I have to say it's pretty bad. I have to agree with most of the critics there on that.
Well, is it as good as The Adventures of Sharkboy and Lava Girl? His other film, or Planet Terror? Come on, it's got to be as good as Machete, or should Machete? Yeah, okay.
But I went mostly to see the technology, which was quite remarkable.
What do you mean technology? Like how the movie was made?
Exactly. The main character, Alita, played by Rosa Salazar, is actually entirely CGI.
Wait a minute. Played by? She's a cartoon.
Yes, she is. But to make the movie, she had to be in the scene as a real person wearing a mocap suit.
One of those strange green suits with the little puffs on them.
Exactly. Yeah. She had tons of dots on her face because 2 cameras. Can you imagine acting with people have done this before. Andy Serkis did it in Planet of the Apes movies and so on, and as Gollum in Lord of the Rings.
Just a little hint, kids listening in Hollywood who want to get in the movies, learn how to act with 2 cameras and dots on your face.
Exactly.
It's the future, baby.
It's amazing, actually. This was the first time. And I mean, imagine acting, and you've got this camera rig kind of stuck on your head and pointing back at you from a couple inches away. I mean, it must be very weird.
Wow.
But they did a great job. I think they really did a great job. They basically made this cartoon character look like Rosa Salazar.
Okay.
And it's very far up the Uncanny Valley. Remember the movie Polar Express?
Oh, yeah, which was
Tom Hanks.
Yeah, Uncanny Valley means it's some amazing ability humans have to detect something that's just not quite right. And in animation, if you make it look as they did in Toy Story, like toys or animals, people don't get upset. But if it's a human, even if it's really close as it was in Polar Express, actually, especially if it's really close as it was in Polar Express, it's disturbing.
Yes. Well, in this movie, Alita gets way closer to looking photorealistic than they did in Polar Express.
Was there a little uncanny valley?
There is a slight uncanny valley, but it's okay because she is supposed to be a synthetic person, a synthetic character.
Right.
And you add on to that the movie was shot in 3D. Remember, this is James Cameron we're talking about here. Right. He still is the executive producer. He didn't actually direct it, but he was involved in the movie.
You know, there is a certain amount of overlap, though, because in order to play in these movies, you have to basically wear a wetsuit. So maybe there's – I think James Cameron likes wearing wetsuits. I think that's it.
Well, maybe that is because he certainly likes diving.
Yeah, a lot of green screen, a lot of blue screen, and then so interesting. So
it's and in Dolby Cinemas. I went to see it in a Dolby Cinema because I think that's the best cinematic experience you can have today. And normally, Dolby Cinema does not show things in 3D that are being shown in 3D, say in IMAX or other theaters.
Yeah, there's an IMAX 3D version of this too. Right?
There is. Yeah. But this one was shown in 3D in the Dolby Cinema, which is rare. That hardly ever happens. And I think it's because it was shot in 3D to begin with. It wasn't converted, right? Most movies that you see in 3D are shot in 2D and then converted to 3D. This one was shot in 3D to begin with.
Hmm.
And so, again, James Cameron, he was very insistent and really wants to promote 3D, and he did it in this movie, and the Dolby Cinema showed it in 3D. And it's got a bunch of silly effects of things flying out at you and so on, which is kind of not interesting. But it does lend another element or layer of sort of syntheticness to the image, which makes Alita herself look less uncanny.
See, movies like this, I don't really care about the movie. I'm really interested in how they made it, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's why I went.
Yeah.
That's exactly why I went.
Because
I wanted to see the result. And it's a beautiful-looking movie. I mean, and this is a problem with movies today. They often look better than they are as stories.
Right.
And this one isn't a great story. It's very complex. It's convoluted. You're not quite sure.
If you were a fan of the manga, you might. You know what's going on anyway. You want to see your favorite character coming to life with dots on her face and in a
well,
wetsuit.
You don't see those dots in the...
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Okay.
You know, you go look up stuff on the web about how they made the movie, and you find it. But
sometimes I think all this technology can get in the way of storytelling. Like, it's hard to tell a story if you have all this technology going on to
all
make it.
All this whiz-bang.
It distracts. That's why I don't like 3D movies that much. Is they're spending a lot of time showing off 3D effects, and I'm not there for the 3D effect. The world is 3D. I can get plenty of that here.
Well,
I'm here for the storytelling.
And the storytelling here was not that great. And, in fact, I think it was obscured somewhat by all the whiz-bang, which you just go, wow, you're just looking at that.
Do you have to see it, though, in a Dolby Theater, or can you wait for VHS, as they used to say?
I would. I also wanted to see it in a big screen, and the Dolby Atmos sound is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of stuff swirling all over the place.
Scott Wilkinson, he's our home theater geek, always here with something interesting to talk about. I appreciate it, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll get back to the phones right after this. La, 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 la. So we got a lot of thank you, Scooter X, for sending me the YouTube video where we can really see this in action.
I'm sorry.
She sent me...
I couldn't hear you. Oh, there you are.
Yeah, she sent me a YouTube video that has all this... Scooter did. Sent me all this video that shows really a lot of how they're making it. It's really interesting.
Yeah. I thought it was beautifully done as far as, you know, making it and the technology involved. Like I said, the story wasn't anything to write home about, but
Cameron's more interested in technology than anything else, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah. I didn't think Avatar was that great a story either, to tell you the truth.
No, but it was. So that was another example of CGI, right? A lot of those characters were CGI.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Almost everything in the Avatar world outside of the compound that the humans were in was all CGI.
I think it must also. I wonder if the actor's performance is hurt by this technology too.
Yeah, yeah. How can it not be when you're in a wetsuit with a bunch of ping pong balls and dots on your face and a camera stuck on your head?
But that's kind of an actor's, a movie actor's job anyway, because it's always an abnormal environment. I mean,
true.
You have to have a lot of concentration and the ability to kind of compartmentalize and focus.
And I thought her face was very expressive.
Yeah.
And purposely. I mean, they had, you know, dozens of these dots on her face and these two cameras. They were capturing micro expressions.
Yeah.
And I thought they did a great job of that. Although, I have to say, it was a little weird. I don't know if you read this or not, but the Alita character, they actually widened her eyes to make it look more
like
No,
I saw the trailer. You know what? I really disliked that. I thought that was...
Yeah, it looked weird.
Because it does look... It's interesting. The face of the actress is Alita's face. It's not like they didn't use her face. They just modified it to make her eyes bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
In the manga tradition.
Yeah.
But she's the only one.
Yeah, well, she's a battle angel. She's not human.
She's not normal, yeah. The other weird thing I found was they called her a cyborg, which technically means a combination of human and organic and inorganic parts. And she seemed pretty inorganic to me. I read later that she's supposed to have a human brain that was transplanted into this body. So, okay, I'll give them that. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting, and I like to tell people that, you know, if they want to see some good examples of movie technology, that's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
But don't go expecting a good story.
And watch the behind the scenes stuff on YouTube and so forth.
Absolutely,
because it's really interesting to see how they made it. I don't know if you should do that before or after.
It's a good question. I myself would do it before. I didn't see.
It's not worth preserving the magic of the movie, really.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Key 43 is asking, didn't I watch it in IMAX? I was going to spend the extra money. Should I not? You know what? I don't remember whether it has
there's an IMAX
any IMAX.
Version. Oh, but whether it uses
But does it have whether it uses the full IMAX aspect ratio? I don't know. Let me see if I can find that out real quick. I'm on IMDb and there are tech specs. Here are the tech specs. Aspect ratio 2:3:9:1. So it does not use
interesting
all of the.
What do they do? An optical blowout to make it, or are they just bars?
Sometimes they do that, or sometimes they shoot on IMAX cameras.
Right, right.
Which have the other aspect ratio.
But they would make this more square.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And this one, it doesn't do that, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. All right, Scott, so stick around for the top or no?
You bet. Happy to.
All right, we'll see you in a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. The phone number. We'll go back to the call. Steve in St. Louis is next. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
Good. I'm well.
To you. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
I am a full-time photographer in the Canon world, and I use a NAS server to back up my photographs, and I typically use that NAS server to bring in the pictures from that NAS to Lightroom. And I've noticed in the past maybe year that maybe 5 to 10% of the images are corrupt.
Oh, that's
raw.
That's really what you don't want to have happen, because you don't necessarily notice until you review the image.
Right, and you get it in Lightroom, and it's it typically has like a pink kind of box somewhere on it. And I don't know. I've got a Synology server as well, which doesn't seem to do it. And I've also tried it with Mark III's and my Mark IV Canon cameras, and they all seem to occasionally do this. And I just thought,
Well, the issue is that you're loading the images from the network, through the network from the NAS, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is an interesting conundrum. Normally, when you do stuff over a network, you're using a error corrected, you know, technology. Like, you know, when, you know, the packets come in, they have to be ACT, they have to be verified. But for speed, it may well be, and I presume you're using, are you using Windows file shares or Mac? How are you?
I'm in the Mac world.
So it's a Mac file share. That's interesting. Yeah, does the NAS show up on the desktop as a drive?
It does.
Yeah.
It does. And, you know, I didn't seem to notice it, you know, several years ago, but the more and more that I'm shooting RAW, and that's almost exclusively what I shoot now, this is when I've noticed it. And it might be that I just need another device to store these things and back them up on and just not go that route. But I've talked to Canon, and they were stumped. They had no idea. They blamed it on something other than their gear, and I believe them with that.
My guess is it's possible that the data is getting corrupt on the disk. So that's the first thing. There's two ways this could be happening. Data's corrupt, right? And that this can happen. If a few bits are flipped, the image file will still be look like an actual image file and will be loaded by, you know, if it were bits flipped at the prologue, the header of the file, well, then Lightroom would say, oh, it's corrupt. But it's not. It's in the data after the prologue. Everything's normal. But it starts to read some data, and it's corrupted. And so you get a pink box or something instead of the image. And a chunk of that data. So that's file corruption. The question is, where's the file corruption happening? Is it happening locally on the NAS, and then the NAS is just transmitting it? Or is it happening in the network? One way to test this is if it's always the same every time. So if when you load that image in Lightroom, if it's always got the same defect in the same spot every single time.
And it does.
Okay, so that means that the data is getting corrupted on the NAS. If it were getting corrupted in transmission over the network, which was my initial thought, it would be different. You know, sometimes it'd be fine. Sometimes it would be in a different spot because the data corruption isn't going to always. Usually, I wouldn't expect it anyway to happen in the same place every time. So my guess is it's getting corrupted on that NAS. What kind of NAS is it?
It's one that I just built up. There's no brand.
What software are you running?
It is NAS. I forget the version.
Is it FreeNAS?
It is FreeNAS. FreeNAS. Yep.
So it's my guess that it's FreeNAS that's corrupting. What files? You know, one way to avoid this might be using a different file system. I don't know if FreeNAS offers ZFS. That might be one way to do it. But it sounds to me, honestly. You're not going to have this problem with Synology because Synology does a lot of, you know, that's why I like Synology. They really do a lot to protect your data. And it's my guess that something's going on in the storage on the NAS, and it's not verifying either when it's writing or copying or something.
And it's only with RAW files. I've never seen it with anything else. And
that's kind of interesting.
Thumbnails.
I wonder why it's only RAW files, not JPEGs, huh?
No, not at all. And thumbnails that, you know, at first you might look and it looks fine until you get it into Lightroom. And then once it's corrupt, it's corrupt for good.
It sounds like it's related to the size of the file then, right? Because the largest file size you work with is RAW.
Right, and those are typically 35 to 40-something meg files.
It's not that big.
No, not huge. Yeah.
And how do you get the files on the NAS? How do you use a cart? What are you doing?
Well, I'll typically bring them from my card and have a reader and go right from that reader into the NAS.
Okay, so you're not reading it to the computer, then copying it to the NAS.
No.
One thing you might try, it's an adding an extra step, is reading to the computer, copying it to the NAS.
Yep, that's not a bad idea.
And then see if you get the corruption there. It's possible that in the process of reading, there's a mismatch. You know, the card reader's sending data at a certain rate. The NAS can't keep up. Doesn't show up until you get to a certain size. You know, there's all sorts of weird interactions like that. But you might be able to eliminate this problem by reading it first and doing it. If you read it from the card reader onto your Mac, I would think the Mac would verify the files. If not, use a program that verifies the files that they're copied to make sure that they're good on your Mac, or you could spot check.
That's a good idea, because I don't know if they're going south when they go in or when they're coming back to me.
Exactly.
But I didn't even try a new reader thinking that maybe that was an issue, but that didn't seem
to. Well, that's
what
we're trying to do is, you know, kind of narrow down the causes. Because, so first try reading it locally to the Macintosh, you know, do 10 images, make sure they're all okay, copy them to the NAS. It may be that the corruption happens over time. It may be it happens instantly. It may be it happens only when you're reading from a card reader into the NAS. There's, you know, so you're going to narrow it down a little bit.
Yep, that makes sense. Well, we'll just keep our fingers crossed and keep backing up in other ways.
Yeah, and I would also do some research on FreeNAS and data corruption just to see if FreeNAS, which is an open source network attached storage, that's what a NAS is, network attached storage operating system. It's designed for this. I would wonder if maybe this is a problem others have reported. This is the kind of thing, if it happens, hobbyists. The nice thing about using open source software like FreeNAS is there's a lot of people banging on it, using it. And right. I think people are quicker to report problems and try to get them fixed. So,
well, with images like this, and it's the business, you just want
to... Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that's the way to keep them alive.
Yeah, that's why I would be... you want to solve this, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you leave the image on the card for a while just to make sure?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They just stack up until I feel totally comfortable. But,
right.
That's been a process that's kind of developed as I've seen things.
Many photographers. I do it myself when I'm on a trip. I just buy enough cards so I don't have to reuse them.
No, that's right. And there's another nice device that's made by Western Digital that allows you to plug cards directly into the hard drives.
Just remember, those cards, that's the original. You don't delete the original until you're absolutely sure you have multiple copies of it that are good.
Absolutely.
And you know that. You've learned the hard way.
Absolutely.
My friend Peter Krogh, who wrote the damn book, the digital asset management book, is the expert on this. And he's got a great site. I'm sure as a photographer, you're familiar with it. It's dpbestflow.org.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a thing that he did with the Library of Congress and the Association of Professional Photographers. And it's the American Society of Media Photographers. Sorry, ASMIP. And it's a great source for photographers and others on how to keep your data safe and other workflow issues. I really like it. dpbestflow.org, which you already know about that. Hey, thanks for calling. I hope you can solve this.
Oh, we will. I appreciate your help.
My pleasure. Have a great day. Yeah. Ha, 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 ha. Ha! And now, ladies and gentlemen, I deliver unto you the Wilkinson, a.k.a. Scott. And he's got strange beasts behind him, but I'm going to give
you
a clock instead of those weird beasts.
I was just looking up where... look, we have so many Dolby Cinemas now.
Dolby Cinema.
I'm still working on actually, Leo, getting you down to Dolby in San Francisco.
Oh, I'd love that.
To talk to go. They have obviously a Dolby Cinema there at their facility.
I've been to that actually.
You have seen. Okay, good.
In fact, I've told this story before. I was walking by one day because it was just around the corner from Tech TV. A guy goes, Leo. I said, what?
That's right.
he was at the time demonstrating the difference between MP3 encoding and AAC.
Right. And how long ago was that?
Probably 20 years ago now. Yeah. But I've been there. It's cool. Very cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. All yours, okay. My friend.
Thank you. So I'm looking, I think it was Keith in the Keith43 in the chat room. Looking for a place to go see Alita at a Dolby Cinema, and he lives out in the Desert Empire. So I was looking up Dolby Cinemas in California. There's one in Ontario, which is fairly close to you, I think. Riverside, semi-close. Those are probably the closest ones. He was asking whether or not he should go see it in Dolby Cinema or IMAX. And we were talking a little bit about this before the break. I don't think that there's any reason to go see it in an IMAX theater in terms of aspect ratio. For me, the only reason to go see something in an IMAX theater is when they have shot something in IMAX cameras and the aspect ratio is taller. And either it's that way through the entire movie or it switches back and forth, which interestingly enough, you normally don't notice because you're into the movie, you're watching the movie. And so you don't notice that the aspect ratio changes, but it really expands things out. This happened, for example, in First Man, the story about Neil Armstrong, which I have to say I didn't like very much either. Some people may have, and some people liked Alita here in the chat room.
You finally saw it, huh?
Oh, I saw it some time ago. Did you see it?
Yeah. I was the one who was telling you how awful it was.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I saw it, and I didn't like it.
Yeah. I was upset about it. I felt like it...
I was, too, because I thought it was going to be a really good one.
No, it could have been, yeah.
It could have been, but it wasn't. Anyway, I don't... So, First Man, when he gets to the moon... In IMAX, that
expands out.
Aspect ratio expands out,
yeah.
and it's so expansive, and it's what it's supposed to be. When you're on the moon, you're looking around, you're going, "Wow, this is very expansive," and so that's the feeling they were trying to create by doing it by shooting those segments in IMAX. And when you go to a regular theater, those segments are not expanded; they're just the same as the rest of the movie. And so, how big a difference is that? I don't know. In some cases, it may be more impressive than others. It was impressive in First Man. Generally speaking, though, the black levels in an IMAX are not as good as Dolby Cinema. They're better in an IMAX laser theater than they are in an IMAX theater that uses lamp-based projectors. But they're still not as good as Dolby Cinema. And the overhead sound isn't as good. So... that's why I prefer going to a Dolby Cinema. And so if you're in the Desert Empire, there were a couple of options there that aren't that far away. They're somewhat far away. Let's see. What else have we been talking about here? Marsworm says James Cameron is also working on the final Terminator movie. Oh, man. So he really doesn't have any time.
Now, Terminator was a good series. Okay,
I thought so.
That one's good. All right.
I agree. Yeah. Titanic was a great movie. More historical.
I love Titanic, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So Jim Cameron can do some good stuff, no doubt.
You bet.
Irvine Rob says, my brother just bought a Vizio PQ65F. Oh, man, I love that TV. Also, can you recommend a sound bar? Well, it depends on how much you want to spend. But that TV is awesome. I really like it. The soundbar, I would look at Vizio soundbars, to tell you the truth. They make, depending on the size of the room and what you want, I would get one that's specified as 514. So it'll have a model number like SB for soundbar, 46 inches long, 514, which means 5.1.4 sound, an Atmos sound system. It's got five speakers around you, well, three in front in the sound bar, two physical speakers on the sides and rear, and a subwoofer. And the surround speakers and the sound bar all have upfiring Atmos speakers that give you the overhead sound. So as long as you have a ceiling that is flat and fairly reflective, doesn't have acoustic tiles in it, then I would get a Vizio 5, like a SB46514. They also make ones that are designated 512, and that means that there are only two upfiring Atmos speakers in the soundbar itself to give you sound from overhead from two channels rather than four channels. I prefer the sound of four channels, but two channels obviously cheaper. And Mike Mann says, I learned that Dolby Atmos soundbars aren't as terrible as it seems they would be. Yeah, they're not. They don't have to be anyway. There's nothing inherently limiting, well, somewhat limiting, I suppose. But I mean, you're always going to have up firing speakers. And again, as I say, as long as you have a reflective flat ceiling, it's going to sound great. Irvine Rob asks, is 2.1 a waste? No, it's not a waste. Depends on what you watch on the TV. If all you're watching is broadcast TV, you know, 2.1 is fine. A lot of broadcast TV now is 5.1. So it'd be nice if you had the surround system, but you don't need it. But if you're watching movies a lot, then yeah, I would want a 5.1 or even a 5.1.2 or 5.1.4 system, because a lot of movies now have Atmos and most movies have surround sound. And I think it's important to have that experience with the movie, because that's how it was intended. Let's see. Lawn Dog has, here's an answer for the bigger question for the desert. The desert IMAX theater. Lawn Dog, is the desert IMAX theater laser-based or lamp-based? I don't know the answer to that question. If it's lamp-based, I'm not that interested, because the black levels are so high. And you got to take this with a grain of salt. I'm a sucker for black levels. I really love deep, dark black levels. So that's why. And if you don't want wires, Irvine Rob, you can, the surround speakers on the Vizio soundbar are wireless. Boom.
Thank you, my friend. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week. All right.
You bet.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We've got your smartphones. We've got your smart watches. We've got all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can always reach us. Just use Skype out or something like that. It won't cost you anything. 8888-ASK-LEO. All the answers to all the questions show up after I spout them on the website, techguylabs.com. And if I should spout an incorrect answer or an incomplete answer, or you just have more to say, you can leave comments there at techguylabs.com. We divide the page into shows, and then each show into hours, each hour into calls or segments. So it's, you know, easy to find the part of the show. This is episode 1,566. Yes, they're all there. Count them. 1,566. And I would hasten to say that that website is free. There's no sign up. No obligation, no salesman will call, batteries not included. We do ask, if you're going to leave a comment, that you log in with your Twitter or your Facebook or your Google or something. That way it's just to slow down spammers, basically. TechGuyLabs.com. On we go with the calls. Glenda Costa Mesa, California. Hello, Glenda.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for hanging on.
Oh, you're welcome. I want to get you off speaker. Sorry. Okay. All right. So I need to get a new computer. I know this is just a basic question, but I have an iPad Air that's like 7 years old, and I don't use it for anything but like solitaire and internet.
Yeah.
But I have stepped on it. I have taken it everywhere. Wow. I've dropped it. It's cracked, and it still works.
Wow.
I have a new Asus. Not new. It's like 2 years now. It's an Asus. It is a gaming computer, and I was going to use it for gaming, but I do use it with Microsoft Office package, but it constantly slows down, and it weighs like, I don't know, 12 pounds or something, and it's a laptop, and I want something like an iPad Air size that I can do Microsoft Office on it and carry it around, and but I don't want to have all the I hire someone who does maintenance, you know, ongoing maintenance.
You don't want to have to do all that, yeah. You know, here's the interesting thing is that there are versions of Office for the iPad. You know that, right?
Yes, I just learned that, yes.
Yeah. In fact, Microsoft drew a lot of ire from Windows fans because they released their touch versions of Microsoft Office for the iPad before they did it for Windows.
Uh-huh.
So what I would do with your old, beat-up, broken and still operating iPad Air is just download Office and see if you like it. Because if you can use it, you know, an iPad Pro, the current version of iPad Pro, if you get a keyboard with it, might be a very good choice. because you wouldn't have to worry about maintenance or viruses or security or any of that stuff. It would give you the capability to use Office, admittedly a more limited version of Office, but you know, most people don't use all the features. You use it for word processing, spreadsheets? What do you need?
I do some word processing, and then I also do Excel spreadsheets.
I mean, it has Excel and Word. I would, but it is a little more limited. So it'd be worth a little experiment just to see, since you have an iPad, if you could get away with that. Because then another iPad might be a very good choice. You like your iPad, right?
Oh, I do. Mine's seen a lot better days,
though. Yeah, and the newer ones are super fast. Really, the tragedy of the iPad, especially the current ones. By the way, I expect we'll see new iPads announced March 25th. That's the rumor about 1 month from now. Apple will have a spring event, but they won't. I don't think they'll update the iPad Pros that they just released in the fall. I have a 12.9, which is the size of a laptop, so it's a big screen. The tragedy of the iPad, at least in its most modern incarnation, is this is a desktop class processor. This is a super fast, super beautiful, elegant computer. But it's running iOS, which has not yet caught up to the capabilities of desktop operating systems. Now, the capabilities of desktop operating systems include the ability to run viruses, to break down, to have all sorts of problems. As you know, you have to have a guy to keep yours running. Mm-hmm. So sometimes those capabilities are oversold. If you can do what you want to do on an iPad and you're familiar with the iPad and you like it, it might be worth just getting an iPad Pro. Incidentally, an iPad Pro with keyboard and if you want pencil, it's going to end up costing as much as a laptop. So the other thing to look at is there are Windows tablets very similar to iPads. In fact, Microsoft makes the best of them, I think, the Surfaces. The Surface Pro is a full-bore Windows 10 machine. It's a tablet just like your iPad. It has a detachable keyboard, which is sold separately and more expensive. You can also get I'm not sure I would get it, but they have a little one called a Surface Go that's the size of your 9-inch iPad. Mm-hmm. So it's as compact and portable, but it's running Windows 10. I guess what I'm saying mm-hmm. is, do you need Windows 10? Because if you can avoid it, it's worth avoiding.
I'm still trying to figure out how to use it. So
Windows 10, that's why you need a guy, right?
What do you need to do with it?
You need a guy. And, in the early days of cars, I'm told that when you bought a car, you got a chauffeur and a mechanic that came along with it. Because, and we're barely out of those days with computers. Most people who use computers, certainly at work, have an IT department. They have somebody who does that stuff for them. And we know people get in a lot of trouble with Windows 10 at home. Because they don't. They become the IT department. So if you're comfortable, the other thing you might want to look at that's the budget choice, less expensive, is a Chromebook. You can run, depends again what your needs are, you can run the web versions of Office on those. But, of course, Chromebooks are designed around Google properties, including Google's own documents, Sheets, which is their version of Excel. And it depends what you do with Excel. If you're doing pivot tables, very elaborate Excel charts, things like that, maybe that wouldn't be enough. But if you're just doing a spreadsheet and you want recalculation and stuff like that, Google Sheets are great. And that's all stored in the cloud, so it's safer. It's absolutely secure. And Chromebooks aren't very expensive. I would recommend something like the Samsung.
How is it safer?
Because it's designed
in the cloud, or you mean did you mean the cloud?
It's in the cloud. It's safer because it's backed up. You can't lose it.
Oh,
it's also safer because Chromebooks are inherently secure. There are iPads and Chromebooks were more recently designed, and as a result, are really designed with security in mind. When Windows was created, I mean, there weren't even barely even viruses around. They weren't really aware of any of that. That's
so does
changed.
Chromebook have a touch screen?
It does.
Too? Okay, so
what won't have so all of these will have touch screens if that's something you really like.
Do you want to have it connected to your Verizon account or?
You could.
Matter,
that's an option.
Why would I
only be? Well, Chromebooks are really designed to be used online, so you would want to always be somewhere online. You can do them offline, but it's really
offline's a temporary solution until you get online. So those are online. iPads, as you know, don't have to be online. They certainly work better if you have Wi-Fi, right? And you can buy iPads and Chromebooks these days, even Surfaces these days that have built-in, you know, data modems, and you can connect them to your Verizon account or whatever carrier you want to use and get the data that way. So you could be at a coffee shop. You don't have to use a coffee shop Wi-Fi. You have your own internet connection at all times. So all three of those choices would give you that.
Okay.
And you'd probably want that. You're using it for work, so you don't mind spending a little money, I think, getting the right tool. I would look at, if you're going to get a Chromebook, look at the Samsung Chromebook Plus 2, the second generation. That has LTE available if you want. It also has a pen built in. I really think that those any of those three would be good. What you should do is try all three. You can go to Best Buy or somewhere and try them. Or use your iPad that you've already got to make sure that Excel, or the in the case of the Chromebook, the Google Sheets app, will do what you need to do with a spreadsheet. I bet it will. It does 90%. Right. I mean, I never need anything more than that.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Yay. Welcome. Exciting. New computer time. Honestly, the most elegant, most powerful, most beautiful computer I've ever seen is a 12.9-inch iPad Pro. But the tragedy of it is it's running iOS, which in time, I'm sure, will become much more of a powerful operating system. But right now, as you know, because you use one, it's very simple. Now, if it's adequate to your needs, that's the way to go. Simple is always preferable to complex, especially with computers. Complex means more maintenance, more security issues, you know, that kind of thing. Rob in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hello, Rob.
Hello, Leo. All of a sudden, I want to sound like Rod Radio.
Rod Radio. Do you ever work in the radio, Rob?
I have, yes.
I thought you might have.
Yeah, and do announcing now in air shows. But anyway, hey.
Oh, that's right. We talked before. You do the air shows. How cool.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, I have a first world problem, and I'm almost embarrassed to ask it, talk about it, because I also vacationed in Maine, where we're on the end of a DSL line where 2 megabits is lucky.
Oh, oh Lord.
But I, oh. Yeah. Oh. Oh, my. Well, anyway, I put in a mesh router system, and I get, and it's revolutionized the house. The third of the house that was just kind of empty is now perfect.
Fantastic. And yeah.
Whose speed tests do I trust? Because on my mobile devices, it says max of a 50 to 60. On my wired devices, it's up over 200, which Spectrum gives. But speed tests, Speed Smart, and DSL reports, what's the one I should trust?
I do them all. I trust DSL reports, of course, but I would do them all. Here's a couple of issues with speed tests. First of all, what you're getting is normal. Mobile devices rarely have the throughput of desktop or laptop devices. Okay. None of mine do. I don't know why that is. They don't have faster radios or something. But still, for a mobile device, 50 megabits is plenty.
Good.
Nothing to worry about. The issue with speed tests are that the internet service providers know you're using a speed test, and they may or may not speed up. Comcast, for a while, and I think they still do it, did this thing called Blast, where they start really fast, and then they slow down because they can't really sustain those speeds. And you don't really care what the speed is at peak. You care about the sustained speed. And speed tests used to be not long enough to tell. And so you'd get these amazing speeds. But if you kept watching, you'd see it go after, you know, 30 seconds. And that was, in my opinion, all about tricking the speed tests. The one I use lately, which I really like, is an HTML5 speed test called speedof.me. Speedof.me. Okay. But I wouldn't use any one. I'd use them all. And remember, it's not the peak. The peak, I guess, is the best you can get.
Yeah.
Which is good to know. That should be close to what they say. Remember, when they tell you a number, they're saying as fast as. Right? They're not saying guaranteed. They're saying as fast as 200 megabits a second, which means, good luck. You know, if the wind's at your back, maybe. So what you're looking at is both the peak, which should be close to what they're telling you as fast as speed, and then the sustained throughput or the average throughput. And it's also good to look at the lowest because that may be when there's congestion. You know, a lot of you're on a cable internet system. A lot of cable internet systems slow down around just after dinner every night when everybody goes into the living room and starts watching Netflix. And everybody in your neighborhood's streaming Netflix. Remember, the way Spectrum and all cable companies work is they put a certain amount of bandwidth. Actually, this is how cell phone companies work. They put a certain amount of bandwidth into the junction, you know, the head end in the cable terms or the cell site in cell phone terms has a certain bandwidth. But then it's divided among all the people using that head end or that cell tower. And, of course, if 20 people are slamming it, it's going to be slower. You're shared at that point.
Yeah. You
know, that's what the DSL providers always say. Look, bandwidth hogs, you got to watch out with cable. But they have the same problem. It's just a little farther upstream at the central office usually.
Well, I'm really pleased with the mesh router system. But I got to tell you, when I was hooking it up, it wasn't getting the throughput even up as much as 100. And I was talking to my daughter, and she said, well, Dad, did you check the cable between the modem
and
the router? Guess what?
What?
I made it myself. It was bad.
Oh.
I put a commercially built
switch. Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Right.
Getting, you know, probably the difference was shielding. You know, a well-shielded cable will give you better results because there's less interference.
So,
there's a lot of things that can go into that. It's worth the test, but remember, 100's not bad.
Oh, no, it's not bad. I'm not complaining. It, especially when I'm paying for 100 and it's actually showing up on a wired unit as 200 plus.
Yeah, it'll often be faster than you see. In fact, that's the thing to understand is wired's the fastest. So that's the one that'll give you closest to nominal speed. Wi-Fi often is half as fast as wired, about 60% as fast. And then mobile is usually, you know, my experience, half to a quarter as fast.
Well, then I'm right in line with it. Then.
Yes.
That sounds right to me.
Yes, you are.
Sure. I sure like the MacBook Air that you suggested I get.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Months back. Still just mom's home cooking. Is that the one? Is that...
Mom's home cooking? You mean, I don't know who you're talking about.
Well, you're talking about mom's home cooking. About the.
Oh, I did. I called it mom's home cooking. It's like going back to that delicious meal you remember from your youth.
That's the one. It's working great.
Yeah, I love it.
I also got a TCL 43-inch TV. Thanks to you and Scott for the recommendation.
And my mom.
I was
that's my.
And your mom. That's right.
Literally mom's home TV. Yeah.
Yeah. I was pulling one off the rack at Costco and two people walked up to me and said, is that a good set? And I said categorically, yes.
Good. I'm so glad you're happy because I would be sad if I made recommendations that made people unhappy. I try to give people good suggestions, not bad suggestions.
No, you always do, Leo.
I like that Air so much. And, you know, what you'll see online is people say, oh, it's slow. And there's all these, you know, speed snobs and things like that. But I actually prefer it to the – I have a much faster i9 MacBook from 2018, MacBook Pro. I gave it to my son because I like the light. It's fast enough for me. Fast. It's mom's home cooking. Hey, thanks for the call. Radio Rob, signing off. He's been everywhere, man. He's the man of the hour, Mr. Johnny Jett, our traveling guy, who, for a record, 3 weeks in a row has been home.
Well, that's not quite true. I've been home on the Saturday.
Oh, so you were on the road this week.
And I've traveled during the week, I think, almost every week.
Oh.
Except last week.
Well, it's nice to have the weekends at home, I guess.
Of course. I mean, I'm going to be traveling again this week, but I'll be back on
Where were you last Saturday. Week? Tell me.
Vegas. Went for my mother-in-law's big birthday, and we stayed at the MGM Park. MGM.
Oh, how'd you like it?
You know, it's okay. I give it like a 3.5 stars.
See, we stayed upstairs at the Nomad, which is that hotel on the top three floors.
Right.
And here's what my problem with it is. You can tell they've took the old Monte Carlo and they dressed it up. They made it nice.
Right.
But the walls are still the Monte Carlo. In our case, they were very thin.
Yeah, that was my problem too. I could hear the nightclub downstairs.
If I didn't hear
the nightclub downstairs, or if I didn't have a connecting door, I could hear the person sneezing in the room next door.
Don't want that.
I'd give it a 4, you know.
Right.
Because the rooms are clean, they're really nice. It's cheap, and they have Eataly in the lobby.
I love Eataly.
Me too. It was so good.
Except
we went there.
I told you last time they closed at 11. Went to see Lady Gaga. The show was over. We went to Eataly. They said, no, we're closing. I said, what are you got people coming out of the concert? You should be open now.
It's Vegas. You're right. They should at least have one of the restaurants in there open. But
you know what, though? I'm there. I'm thinking, I'm looking, liking City Center. It's so pretty. They got the
tree tram.
I thought it would be really fun to have a condo there, and you could just kind of come down the elevator and you'd be in Vegas, baby.
That's right.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, for sure. So, going to Vegas, by the way, this week, it was rough, the flights. And you probably had heard about the one in Orange County to Seattle where they had to divert to Reno because the turbulence went so bad.
Ooh.
It was one of the worst turbulence I've ever had. And my neighbor's a pilot, and he's like, oh, yeah. He did the same flight an hour later. He's like, man, that was some of the worst I've had. And,
oh, dear.
Yeah.
Now, turbulence is not dangerous.
No, I asked him. I said, do you get scared when you're in turbulence like that? He's like, no. He's like, it's just annoying. He's like, especially when you're trying to eat yogurt or doing a crossword.
Don't be eating yogurt during turbulence. Yeah, you got to sit down. You got to buckle up. And if you have a drink, it's going to end up on your lap. And,
yeah.
But the most important thing, I want to say this, if it's true, is it's not dangerous. The plane is built to handle that.
Sure.
It's as if you're in a boat on the river. And it's bumpy water. That's all.
I like to say you're in a Jeep going down a rocky road.
Yeah. It's not going to hurt anything. It's not going to fall out of the sky.
Right.
It's just
bumpy.
It used
to freak me out big time.
Yeah.
And, it upsets your stomach. And I was with my son.
Nobody likes it. No.
Yeah. But actually, I do have a couple of friends who actually like turbulence, believe it or not. And they also
when they
like rough seas. I'm like, you guys.
Yeah. No, I sleep. What I do, and I think it's a defensive posture. I don't think it's because it's relaxing. But for some reason, in rough water or in turbulence, I fall asleep. And lately, when I fly, I fall asleep before we even take off.
My wife does the same thing. I cannot, but...
It's hard to fall asleep sitting up, but I can do it somehow. I just got me something that you might like. It's a special pillow. You know how normally they're neck pillows.
Okay.
This one's like... it's called the Infinity Pillow. It's like an infinity scarf. Are you familiar with that? It's a circle.
Nope.
It's a circle.
Nope.
It goes all the way around. This is a airline pillow that goes all the way around. It's pretty big. It's about a yard in length. And what you do is it has different ways of wrapping itself so you can sleep in any.
Yes, I did see that.
Any position.
I don't have one.
Infinitypillow.co, and they're nice. They're made. I like them. I got two.
Did you ever see the- Yeah, how about the ostrich ostrich pillow?
I have an ostrich really pillow.
Makes you look dopey.
That's when you put your head in it. It's got a little hole for your nose.
Yes.
And then a little arm holes, too, because you got to have somewhere to put your arms. I don't recommend I have an ostrich pillow. Mine sprung a leak, so I don't take it anywhere.
Okay. Well, I got two things for you.
Yes.
One is
what?
I'm speaking.
Infinity pillow is not enough?
Well, that's good, but I got to give you an app at least.
Okay.
But I'm also speaking at the LA Travel Adventure Show tomorrow. So if anyone's in LA, you go down. I'm speaking around 3:00 on how to find cheap flights, how to get upgraded, miles and points, and apps. And if you use the promo code Johnny19, you get $5 off. And that's at the LA Convention Center.
All right.
But my app for you is called Passport Booth.
Passport Booth.
It's free on iOS and Android, and actually this is a popular app now, and I think you'll love it because this is how you can get your passport photos taken for free.
What?
So you don't have to go to Costco, spend $5, or worse,
what?
Go to like CVS or somewhere else where it costs $15.
I need a new one because I was bald when I took mine.
Well, so these are 2x2 photos. They give you all the prompts. It's quick download. There's an ad at the bottom of the app, which is a little bit annoying, but that's why it's free, and that's why they offer it.
Well, but they charge you for the photo, right? They make some.
No, you can email it to yourself, you can download it to your phone, or there is an option where they will send it to you, and they charge $5.95, but you don't have to.
You're saying you could print it yourself with the passport agency accept it? They would accept it?
Yep. And they have, so they give you the prompts. You have to be behind a white wall, white background, and have a friend take it for you. And they have actually a silhouette, so where you know where you need to line up.
Yeah.
And
don't smile because.
And no glasses.
And no glasses. Hey, I got a question for you before you get to your next thing, and you may not have time with this question.
I don't have a next one.
Good. Real ID. Would you explain what's going on?
Yeah. Well, actually, I went to go get my real ID at the DMV because I lost my driver's license 6 months ago, and I was missing. I can't remember what I was missing. This is a
requirement for flying. The Real ID Act is a federal law that says you have to have there has to be certain features in your picture ID for you to get on a plane, and if it lacks them, you can't get on a plane. And states haven't yet done it.
Well, but the TSA and the government has not.
They haven't enforced it.
They haven't enforced it. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. So
you have to go if you're in California. Ours are not federal compliant.
So if you're getting a new ID, you know, spend the. I think it's a few extra dollars for the real ID.
But you have to bring in extra documents.
Yes, and I was missing one. I think it was my tax form. And I had a tax form, but it was not the right one. But anyway, if you make your appointment in California, at least where I live in the South Bay, it is not painful at all. Usually going to the DMV is really painful. But if you make an appointment in advance, you just show right up and you'll be there. You'll be in and out within 20 minutes.
So you're looking for – you'll know you have a real ID license if it has – California – The California bear, a golden bear in the upper right-hand corner. If it doesn't, in theory, so that's interesting. They aren't enforcing it. In theory, you wouldn't be able to get on an airplane, but that's not happening yet.
I don't know when that's going to happen, when they're going to actually enforce it. So
this law was passed in 2005.
It was years ago, but they keep pushing it. So, you know, I wouldn't worry too much about it, but if you're getting one, if you're getting an ID, you might as well do it.
And many states, when you get a driver's license, it will be real ID. You should ask about it, though, because at some point the TSA could suddenly say, well, we're going to enforce this law, and that is not compliant. Now, I bring my passport with me. That's compliant, right?
Oh, for sure. If you have a passport, you don't have to worry about the real ID.
Okay, so that's one way around it is bring a passport with you.
Yep. So, I always travel with my passport.
Here's another tip. When you get a passport, if you pay a little extra, you get a passport card.
Right.
And I presume that's real ID.
Yep. And that's good. I'm not sure if it's real ID, but I believe it has to be. And you, that way you can at least get to Canada by driving or go on a cruise. Right.
This is government issued ID. It should work to get on an airplane. Johnny Jett at johnnyjett.com. He's on the Instagram and Twitter too. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, real ID. So they're not enforcing. See, that was what I was worried about, that they were going to start enforcing that. It says you'll need a real ID starting October 1st of next year. You don't have to plate it, honestly. I like eating it in a box.
Oh, would you rather me put it back in?
No, don't put it back in. But honestly, you don't have to plate it.
Okay.
Thank you so much. You're way too nice. I think you need to stop being so nice. Isn't she too nice? She's too nice. Look at this. I'm like in a fancy restaurant here. My new diet.
I actually have a file on my desktop right now that of things to do, and one of them is my DMV real ID. So I was missing my W-2 form, employer form.
Until October 1st, 2020. So it's, it's not too far. My license doesn't expire until 2022. So
I wouldn't be surprised if they push it again.
They might push it again because nobody's ready.
Some states are already they're already issuing like real IDs or their licenses. They don't have to worry
about
it.
Are they chipped? What makes it real?
I don't think. I got to do some more research on that, but I don't think so.
This is a good side. By the way, here's the travel pillow, the infinity pillow. See, it's a big old infinity.
Okay.
And so
I have not seen that one.
This is really cool. I bought two of them, but Lisa says I won't carry that on board anything. it's made out of bamboo.
It's funny. I just got this in the mail today, which is an eye mask called Manta. And I really, and I just tried it on, but you can move it and you can adjust the eyes. So, and it's deep enough for your eyelashes. And I just put it on and, you know, it's pitch black. You know, usually when you have an eye mask, you can see a little bit of light. This one you cannot. So I'm flying again in a couple of days. I will try it out.
Lisa has a bunch of different ones that say, one says, don't wake me. One says, wake me for a meal. One says, wake me for coffee. And one has a profanity on it.
Those are funny. I mean, they're brilliant. I was like, I knew people used to put post-it notes on their on their mask. Don't wake me.
Don't wake me. I don't want a meal. I'm sleeping.
Yeah. But you know what? Flight attendants, you know, I don't even know if they're even looking at the mask. So
no, I always tell the flight attendant, I'm not going to be eating.
Yeah.
I would like to sleep, so don't bother me.
Right. Yeah. And that's – or tell your seatmate to tell them. But I see flight attendants all the time waking people up who are sleeping. I'm like, are you serious? They're not going to be happy.
But they may not be happy if they miss a meal. Sometimes people are really crabby if they miss meals.
I know. But you know what? It's their fault for falling asleep.
Your fault for falling asleep, buddy.
Yep. They should – I mean, they got to come up with some, like, rules, like general rules on flying.
Yeah.
And that should be one of them, like for fun. Like
and,
if you
and what to do if you got a middle seat, who owns this, the armrest? That's very important.
Well, the person in the middle. And what's hilarious is that this week when we flew to Vegas, Jack was in the middle, and he honestly was elbowing me off his armrest, and I was like, "Are you joking?
Your son knows his rights."
That's hilarious. I took a picture of it. So, you know. He's 2 years old. The guy's elbowing me off already, off his armrest.
He's a jet. He's a jet. All right, Johnny. Great to see you.
Take care. You
take
too.
Care. Bye-bye.
See you later.
So in case you hadn't heard this whole Real ID kerfuffle, this was a law passed in 2005 after the 9/11 attacks. A federal law that was requiring certain standards for photo ID, government photo ID. And not all states have beefed up their standards. For instance, the state we're in, California, apparently, I didn't realize this, when you get your driver's license, you could choose to have one that is Real ID, federal compliant, or not. But here's the rub. Now, Johnny says that they'll probably push this. They've pushed this in the past. But currently, TSA and airlines and so forth say that you will need a Real ID by October 1st, 2020, October 1st of next year if you want to fly. Or use your passport or passport card or military ID. Any federal identification is okay, but you need Real ID for a if you're going to use a driver's license. They say... And California says if you get a driver's license between now and then and it's not Real ID, it will have a label on it that says federal limits apply. Federal limits apply. there may be other things you need a Real ID for, like buying firearms. So it's worth investigating. It sounds like it's changed. Johnny says he's going to look into it. Some states, many states now have Real ID compatible identification, so you should check with your state. I gather that the deal is doesn't have a chip in it, doesn't have any special stuff in it. It's just how much documentation it took to get it. And in California, in order to get a Real ID, you have to have extra documentation to prove that you're a resident, proof of identity. Like a birth certificate, a passport, but also proof of social security number. Do you still have your social security card? No, I don't. And two different California residency documents, a utility bill, a rental agreement, mortgage statement, medical document. So I guess the idea is higher standards, higher proof of identity standards when you get these cards, make them Real ID. And just it's good to know. I've been hearing about this for a while. I didn't know what the status was of it, so I just checked just to see. And Johnny will, I think, tell us more about it. New York, for instance, they have an enhanced license, which is Real ID in New York State. You know, you kind of might have an indicator. If you had to bring a lot of extra documentation to get your driver's license, probably that's Real ID compliant. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Myron, Minneapolis. Hello, Myron.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I am great. How are you?
I'm a little cold.
Well, I don't know why. Aren't you adapted to the sub-zero temperatures?
Yeah, actually, it's pretty nice today. I'm delivering mail right now in 19 degrees. So
oh, man. Oh, you didn't tell me you're a mail carrier. Oy, yoy, yoy. Gosh, you have to walk. You don't wear shorts in the Minnesota, I'm thinking.
No, not today.
What can I do for you, Myron?
Well, I've got two really quick questions, hopefully. My first one, on my cell phone and my iPad and everything, it works great, but the last pass on my computer, when I checked the wanted to look at the password, it automatically changes it to my LastPass password.
What? No. No. Are you on Windows or Mac?
It's Windows.
Okay. I should disclaim that LastPass is a sponsor of some of our shows. I'm a big LastPass fan. Used LastPass for years. One of the reasons I asked that is LastPass has had to change how they work on Macintoshes because Apple changed how extensions work on Safari. What browser are you using on Windows?
Chrome, I'm sorry.
Chrome. So it may be that LastPass and Chrome, what's happening is, for security reasons, browsers are changing their plug-in architecture. And up until now, LastPass has very conveniently worked with browser plugins, a Chrome extension in your case. And I use the Chrome extension on LastPass all the time. And that's very convenient, but because Chrome, Internet Explorer, Edge, and Firefox are all changing plugin architecture to make them more secure, it may be that that's changed with LastPass. So my suggestion would be log out of your account on the Chrome browser and delete the extension. You know, you go into extensions and remove it. Not merely disable, but remove it. And then go to the extension. You can do this all in settings. And then go to the extension store, the Chrome extension store, and download a new copy of it. You also should make sure before you do that that your Chrome is up to date. Chrome updates automatically, but sometimes you have to close Chrome and reopen it. So I would make sure your Chrome is up to date, and you can see that in the About settings. If it's up to date, and then make sure you get the most up-to-date version of LastPass. I bet you that'll fix it. And it may be because of the change in how the architecture works. You said you had another question?
Yeah, I've got an old cheese grater Mac.
Love those, Mac, man.
Pro.
If I could put in a word with my friends, and I put that in quotes, at Apple, that's what the Mac Pro should be.
Right. I mean, this one's a 2005, so it's
ooh, that's old.
I haven't up. Yeah, and that's I don't want to just toss it into the garbage. I mean, it still works, but I'm wondering, is it possible to put Linux on, you know, or to do something else with it?
Absolutely. Like make a server. Absolutely. Or there are many Linux distributions that will work fine in that cheese grater because it's pretty much standard PC hardware. There's an Intel CPU and all of that. If you went almost any version of Macintosh, if you get the right Linux, will do it. So what I would do is Google your model and Linux and figure out which distribution is right for you. And that's actually a great idea. That would make a very nice server. It's a powerful machine. Easy to add more hard drives, easy to add more RAM. Those cheese graters, you know, we used those for a long, long time. I think we only recently decommissioned them.
Yeah, I loved mine. I loved it. I mean,
beautiful.
Right now, yeah, it's I don't want to just get rid of it.
No. And what's the latest Mac OS you can run on it? Have you tried?
Well, I haven't had it on for quite a while. But
yeah, you might find that it runs just fine. It probably can't go past Snow Leopard, but maybe it can. I don't know.
I think that's what it was, Snow Leopard, actually.
Yeah, you might decide, hey, this is fine. Or put Mac OS Server, which you can get from the App Store. You need Snow Leopard on there, but put Mac OS Server on there and make a great server. But if not, yeah, Linux would be a great choice. There are a number of Linux versions that I like a lot. I always start with Debian because that's not a company. It's community supported, and I think they do a very good job. There's two versions of Debian. There's a stable version, which is what I use for my server, because that way it's going to be reliable. And then there's a kind of an unstable testing that is always updated. Are you getting out of the car to mail to deliver some mail? I'll hang up. I don't want to keep you. Neither rain nor snow nor the tech guy should keep you from your appointed rounds.
Exactly. I really appreciate it.
Hey, yep. It's great to talk to you. Thank you for what you do, Myron. I appreciate it. I think mail carriers are underrated. I think they're the greatest. I love my mail carrier. That's hard work, but, you know, we need them. And, you know. So I like Debian. I also, for more advanced Linux users, Arch is the Linux of choice, partly because the Arch Wiki is the best documentation anywhere. And that's I use a version of Arch called Antergos that works very well on almost anything. Antergos. And for newbies to Linux, of course, the classic recommendation, which I support, is Ubuntu. And that's all of these are free, by the way, Ubuntu. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, time to talk computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography. We could talk smartphones. We could talk smartwatches. We could talk augmented reality, virtual reality. Microsoft has a big event coming up right before Mobile World Congress. Is it tomorrow? Or no, it's a week from tomorrow, I think. They're going to, we think, announce their next HoloLens, which is their augmented reality visor. And maybe this one will be a little more consumer friendly. I don't know. Every company, Apple, Google, Microsoft, they all think that augmented reality is a big thing. That's the idea is, I think it's a big thing, if you can get it to work. The idea is with augmented reality that you'd be wearing special kind of spectacles. It doesn't have to be spectacles, though. It doesn't have to be glass. It could be you could do it with an earpiece, a hearing aid. Did you see the movie Her where, you know, Joaquin Phoenix is wearing a little tiny ear thing, and it's his assistant. Turns out to be Scarlett Johansson. He doesn't see her. He just hears her. And she's, you know, like a very advanced Echo. He talks to her, and she gets some answers to questions, helps him with life. He falls in love with her, of course. That's the plot of the movie. You should watch to see what happens because it's kind of surprising. So I guess that's augmented reality in a way because as you're walking down the street, if your assistant whispers in your ear as you come up to somebody, oh, that's Joe. You used to work with him 4 years ago. His kids are Sarah and Billy. They should be about 14 and 16 right now. Actually, she wouldn't say about. She'd know, wouldn't she? And then when you say, you walk up to, hey, Joe, how's the kids? Is Billy in high school yet? That kind of thing, you'd be, wow. People would say, oh, he cares about people. No, I just have a thing in my ear. Virtual reality spectacles would superimpose that information. I'll give you an example. My friend Daniel Suarez wrote two great science fiction books using augmented reality. People would see reputation scores floating above people's head. Like, well, this guy's trustworthy, but don't borrow money from him because he's a cranky cuss or whatever. And that would be floating over their heads as you walk down the street. Kind of an interesting idea. You know, it's like having their Facebook page available to you at all times. We're way off from that. For this to work, of course, first of all, it has to look like regular glasses. It can't look like a bizarro visor from, you know, Space Invaders, which most of these do, even the HoloLens do. In fact, most of them have a big wire coming off your back, and you either have to have a backpack with a giant computer or you're tethered to a computer. I've seen a couple, though, that don't. You could just clip something on your belt. I think ultimately, and battery life, by the way, has to be 12 hours, 15, as long as your phone, right? Because you're going to wear it all day. So if you could wear something that looks like just regular eyeglasses, has, you know, all the information of the world, you can talk to it. It can superimpose on the world as you walk around informational stuff that would be useful. You walk up to an elevator. It says, oh, you need to go to the 21st. According to your calendar, you're visiting Van Cleef and Arpels. That's on the 21st floor. And you go up to the elevator, and then your assistant talks to the elevator and says, can you get me a elevator express to 21? And the doors open, and your glasses say, go in here, and you know maybe show a little arrow. Wouldn't that be cool? That's kind of the future. That's augmented reality. Needless to say, it's not only is it not here yet, but nothing anybody's seen is even close. But it'll happen. It'll happen. I think it will. I think that's going to be the kind of the next stage of computing. Maybe 10 years, you know. People are working really hard on it. And of course, one reason companies like Apple and Google and Microsoft are investing heavily in it is if that's the next thing in computing, you don't want to miss it. You don't want to be, you know, the company that forgot. Microsoft almost missed the internet. Everybody's learned that lesson. 8888 Ask Leo, line 2, Ron, Charlotte, North Carolina. Hello, Ron.
Hey, Leo. Good afternoon.
Afternoon. How are you?
Pretty good. Greetings from the town doing the NBA All-Star Weekend.
How exciting. Is it crazy?
Yeah, uptown. They've got the 150,000 estimated people coming into town, so they can say, stay away from uptown. So.
Hey, it's fun, though, isn't it? It's good. It's good. It's good for the city and all that.
They'll make a few dollars. Hey, the reason for my call is I've been a long time, like a lot of people, having cable and the DVR and things like that. And now I'm starting to look. I'm 60 and I'm looking at the monthly bills and I'm like, that's it's $200 a month.
Yeah. And isn't it amazing how they ratcheted that up 5 years ago? Everybody was going, can you believe it's $100 a month? And they've just ratcheted it up kind of without our noticing. And it's gotten to the point where it's very expensive.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, it's just bare minimum. I mean, I've got the bundle, you know, the phone, internet and cable, but it's like, you know, it's like, well, I need the internet and I need the phone for work. Right. And I'm doing bare minimum on the cable, but I was just thinking, trying to cut that part out and go in the cable company. It's like if you cut one out of your bundle, then they've got you by the throat. So
they're not stupid. They know that what you and everybody else wants to do is eliminate TV. Truthfully, you could even eliminate phone and do it all over the internet these days. And they've been worried about this for 20 years. I remember talking to a cable company called Cablevision, very forward thinking, that said, look, our business model doesn't allow us to be a dumb pipe, you know, an internet provider and nothing else. We need to sell people premium services. And so what's happened is all of these companies have ramped up the price of internet so that they can start to recoup some of that. And they've started to push these bundles. And this is the one you're coming up against. They say, well, if you don't get the bundle, we would have to charge you more for the internet. It's like, I get it.
But I was just wondering, I mean, I've always had the DVR and such. I say, do I break out my old Betamax or VHS?
No.
And go over
there?
But I was wondering, I mean, is there like, I've heard of the Sling Box. I mean, is there just like.
No. It's all changed now. So everything now is streaming. You already know about Netflix, I'm sure. Everybody does, right?
Mm-hmm.
So imagine that. I mean, it's Netflix plus all the other stuff you like can be streamed over the internet. On top, they call it over the top or on top of the internet, right? OTT, as opposed to OTA, which is over the air, or cable, which is high-priced premium channels. But even HBO, you can buy a la carte for over the top. You could get HBO Now, and they charge, I think, $15 a month, and then you get all the HBO shows. What you'll notice, and it's not an accident, is when you add all this together, the extra whatever $30 you have to pay a month to have just internet, and you add to that HBO Go or HBO Now and $15 and Netflix $11, and you add it all up, it ends up being pretty darn close to your original bill.
Right. Yeah, I was just trying to. Is there some way? One thing
that helps is over the air. So, right now, for instance, let's say you want over the air channels and some basic cable channels. You can go. I like this one for $15 a month. $40 a month. You can get YouTube TV, and they have DVR built into it. It's TV.YouTube.com. You can try it for free. Sling has one as well. You mentioned Slingbox. They call it Sling TV. Same idea. Sony has one. PlayStation View. AT&T has DirecTV Now. These are all over the top, And they basically give you much of the same features as a cable company, but it's all internet based. But again, $45 plus the extra fee for the internet, plus, and you can get Showtime and Stars and HBO through these services in many cases. The nice thing, if you, you live in town, if you have an antenna, over the air is free. So the way to think about this is, what do we really need? If we got over the air, that would give us, you know, our network shows plus it would give us sports, live events. And you add that, say, maybe Netflix, and maybe you're already an Amazon Prime subscriber, so you have to pay extra for that. Now do you have enough? And I would say you probably do. And if there's something you don't want, you can always buy it through Google or Apple. You can buy and rent TV and movies. So the it's going to take some pencil to paper. Figuring out what you got to have, adding the prices up. I would start, if you don't have over the air, I would start with YouTube TV. They have local channels in almost every city now. If you have over the air, look at what it would take to get an antenna and a tuner so that you can watch over the air, because that's going to eliminate some cost right there. Remember we got cable because it was easier than getting over the air. And in some areas, like where I live, you can't get over the air. But if you and you're in Charlotte, you can get over the air. Then maybe over the air is going to be your saving grace, because that's free once you get the equipment. It's, you know, they're not stupid. They've been seeing this coming for 20 years, and they slowly ratcheted up prices, bundled things in such a way that it's very difficult to save money by eliminating anything. Our show today brought to you by Hover.com. My domain registrar, yours too, I hope. If you want to register a domain name, go to Hover.com/twit. Now, let me tell you why I love Hover. First of all, no BS, no extra check boxes. There are domain registrars, you go through 20 pages of upselling before you get the domain. No, that's not Hover. Hover doesn't sell web hosting, so it's very straightforward. They include the things you for sure want, like Whois privacy. It's part of the price. They have so many, over 400 names. It's not just .com.net, it is .org, it's I have .ninja, .pizza, I have a lot of Laporte dot things because it's just so much fun. Let me tell you, if you're moving around from email provider, and that's complicated, you really ought to look at Hover to get a permanent email domain, right? That's just yours. You know, myfamily.com or whatever you, or myfamily.pizza or whatever. They even have dot email. If you want, they've got dot me. That's a great one. .me would be a good one to give a teenager, because you really want kids to start putting their presence out on the net so they control their reputation. .me. That's just one. Perfect for a portfolio, a kid showing their best stuff, their grades, whatever. Hover Connect means it's easy to connect to any website builder with a few simple clicks. Right now, 10% off your domain extension for the entire first year if you go to hover.com/twit. I use it for all my domain names, and I have dozens and dozens. Hover.com/twit. Save 10% off your first purchase. Oh, man. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No, we're not going all night long, but we will for another half hour or so. Nate in Rock and Roll Island, Illinois. Hello, Nate. Oh, did I lose?
Hey, Leo.
There he is. Hi, Nate.
How are you doing?
I am great. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Big fan. Hey, so kind of piggybacking on your last call there.
Yes.
Talking about the...
Cord cutting, we call it.
Cord cutting, yes. Yeah. So I do a lot of cord cutting. I've got my own Plex server set up and all that good stuff.
Yeah, that's when you know somebody's serious. And they have a server, and on his server he's got movies and TV shows, so he can watch them anywhere in the house or even on the road.
Yeah, I also use the HD Home Run, but what I'm looking at here... is I want to find a way to easily distribute all that to all my TVs at one time, whereas now I can only Chromecast to like one device.
Yeah.
So is there a way I can do it to everything at once?
That's called multicast. And, you know, it's great for music. Like Sonos, that's what made Sonos' name, was the ability to play all your music, you know, all your speakers with the same song. They call it party mode. Plex... apparently, this is a very common request for Plex. Let me just see if Plex supports multicast yet. I know they've been working on this for some time. Yeah, but I don't know if they've done it yet. Maybe maybe let me ask the chat room. There's Plex is one of those software and companies that's so beloved by its users. It's small, but it's so beloved by the people who use it that there's usually a very good, you know, forums.plex.tv. There's very good support on Reddit and other social media. I don't know. It looks like Plex, I can't tell if they do or they don't. It looks like they might. What you should do is look in the Plex manual for multicasting, because that's what that's called. And then your server should, in theory, be able to do it, right? It's serving it out over the network. It's just a question of serving it directly to one device or just serving out in a way that all the devices can use it. And that would be, a fairly simple thing to do. It doesn't even require any additional data or anything because you're sending it out already. I'm looking as fast as I can in the various Plex. Let's see. Here we go. Sean seems to have found something in our chat room. Plex, multiplex IPTV and Plex. Is it doable? Or, I mean, I've found many posts saying I want it. Yeah. Yeah. It looks like there is. There's an open beta that started last year. Multiplex, it's called. If it was in beta a year ago, more than a year ago, I imagine it will be out now. So search for multiplex. Get it. It's multicast plexing. Looks like you can do it to at least three devices. There really is no reason, though, you couldn't do it to all your devices. Anything running Plex, a Plex client should be able to pick up a multicast, unless I'm missing some technical issues. So while I don't use Plex myself, I don't know how to do it or even if it works well. But in theory, somebody's working on it's called multiplex, a multiplexing capability. That would be cool for party mode, right? Big game on, or you want everybody to watch a movie or whatever. I think, probably the reason they're slower to do it is you could see how you'd want to do that with music. But do you want the same TV show playing in every room of the house? And why? Christina, Lake Elsinore, California. Hi, Christina. Christina, are you there? Hello, Christina. Maybe she wandered off. She, according to Kim, she's getting text messages from a fake number. She's a teenager. I tell you, this is a real issue. We all get them. We get phone calls, too. And often these will pose as somebody in your neighborhood, right? The spam calls you get from your area code, even sometimes your area code in exchange, the first three digits of your phone number. So it looks like it's a neighbor. I get those all the time. And yeah, think about it. If you can make phone calls from numbers that are made up using software, you could do the same thing with text messages. It's not a lot you can do. If it's always coming from the same number, then you can have the phone company block it. And most text messaging services will offer a way to block it. But if it's not, and if it's somebody really harassing you, it probably isn't. Then it's much more challenging. Now, I gather Christina is a teenager. Are you there, Christina? No. All right. I gather she's a teenager, which means this is even criminal behavior. Here's the deal. The law says if you are in fear of injury or your life, that's a felony. And so you can go to your local police department, show them those messages if somebody's threatening you, and they will then assign a detective and try to track it down. And they probably can do a better job. I know they can do a better job than you can. They might even be able to do a decent job of it because they can then serve warrants on the phone company and so forth. So if these are threats, Christina, then you absolutely should take these seriously. Get your mom and dad to take you down to a local police department, show them those texts, and get them to work on it. If it's just annoying And unfortunately, a lot of trolls are smart enough to not cross that line into physical threats. If it's just annoying, call the phone company. Hope that they'll help you. But, you know, the best, you know, you can do is just ignore it. I'm sorry to say, this is a problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Gizwiz coming up in just a bit. I think we have Christina on the line. Hi, Christina. Are you there now?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm so sorry this is happening to you.
It's okay. No, I am my 13-year-old daughter's mom.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah. And she kept receiving those nasty harassing.
It's terrible.
Yeah, life-threatening kind of a text message.
Ah, so you heard? Did you hear what I say about life-threatening? Yeah. That's cause for criminal action.
I already did everything. I called the police and the sheriff. Pretty much, I was told that nothing they can do. If they are that advanced, they can catch a lot of criminals.
That's the real problem. Is we've set up a system, both for phone calls and text messaging, that doesn't require you to authenticate your number. It's not coming from a real number, or you could get them. You could go back, you could trace it back, but you can't. Just like spam.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's not okay, and it's not okay that this exists. And so the phone companies have to take some steps. The FCC is saying that no later than the end of this year, they have to start implementing something called Shaken and Stir, which is what we call an authentication framework. It requires that the originating carrier and the receiving carrier have to implement it on both ends. The originating carrier, whoever that phone number that the text message is coming from, authenticates that's really a real phone number and that's who's sending the message.
Mm-hmm.
And then on your end, the carrier has to say yes and authenticates it to you so that you know it's okay. Once that's implemented, this will all go away. I hope it's implemented. I don't have high hopes. And one of the reasons is phone companies make a lot of money from text messages, and they don't want to admit it, but spam text messages are a profit center for them, just as robocalls are a profit center for them. So they have to be forced to do this. You've already done what you should do, which is contact law enforcement, but I think they should do more. They're overworked. They don't want to respond.
I know.
The only thing you can do is have your daughter change her phone number.
She doesn't want to do that because she said that she has way too many,
I understand. She'd have to go to all her friends and tell them her new phone number and be very careful who she tells it to, because whoever is sending these knows her number. Do they mention her by name or are they generic?
Yes. I think one of the girls at school.
Yes, it's somebody who knows her because it's mentioning her name.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you want to be very careful who you give that number to.
Yeah.
If she's not, you can tell Christina. If she's not, or you're Christina, I guess.
Yes.
So you could tell your daughter if she's not willing to change it, her phone number, then she has to just ignore them.
Yeah, but sometimes it's kind of really nasty and hurt too.
Of course it does. And this is a big...
I called Verizon, and Verizon said it's not a Verizon kind of a number. Nothing they can do, and they just block those numbers, but every time they use a different number. Yeah.
And if you Google it, you can find, it's very easy to find a way to, they call it spoof.
Yes, spoof.
Spoof these numbers, and that's why the police say, well, there's nothing we can do because it's effectively untraceable.
Yes.
By the way, I'm very sympathetic, as everybody, this happens to me too, and does to everybody in the public eye.
Mm.
It is a big problem on social media. It's terrible when it happens to teenagers because it's bullying.
Yes.
As an adult, I'm smart enough to know, oh, these people are jerks. Who cares, right? I can ignore it. But it's hard when you're 13.
I know, yeah.
And all you can do is support her. I mean, if she's really, you should encourage her to change the number and then be very judicious about who she gives that number to.
The
problem is it happens on Facebook. She probably has a Facebook account too, and it'll happen on Twitter. Twitter is notorious for letting this. Almost all the harassment I get comes from Twitter because they don't care at all. They make no attempt. In any case, they make no attempt to block this kind of stuff, even though they, I believe, could. So, honestly, in the long run, you blame Verizon. You blame the carriers for not implementing a system that makes these phone numbers non-spoofable. They can do it. They can do it. They need to. The FCC says they have to this year. We'll see. And until then, you have my sympathy. Just tell your beautiful daughter. These are jerks. It's just like bullying of any kind. It's just that technology has given bullies new roads, new outlets. And it happens to me. It happens to everybody in the public eye. It happens to many teenagers. Mm-hmm. And the thing is just to, I don't, you know, honestly, it's probably worth you saying as mom, nope, you're going to change your number. And that's that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only real solution.
Yeah.
Is she being bullied on social media too?
No, just recently. I think probably she broke up with another girl and then the other people got involved. And all those kind of.
You remember high school, right, Christina?
That was a long time ago.
It's the worst.
I know.
It's the worst. And, you know, fortunately for most of us, we move on, we grow up, we get more mature, we learn that that's not how to behave in life.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, some people stay frozen in that time and they continue to do this.
Yeah.
They're you know, emotionally immature or they're messed up or they're broken. It's sad, but unfortunately, technology has made it even easier for people to bully.
Yeah, that's very sad that those young kids, 13, 14, can be so cruel, too, to other people.
It's horrible.
It's
horrible. I remember I was a kid. I was teased. I was called names and stuff. I'm fortunate I survived it, but I know many kids take it to heart, and it can really damage them emotionally.
Yeah.
And you want to pay. I'm glad you're a good mom, Christina. You got to be a tiger mom here and just really maybe it's time to tell your beautiful daughter. I'm sorry, but the only way to stop this is to change the phone number.
Yes. Okay. All righty. Okay. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, Christina. It's great to talk to you. And yeah, you have my sympathy. People. So nobody in the public eye will talk about it because nobody wants to fuel this monster. But technology is allowed, even if, you know, there's one person who's decided to be a pain in the butt, that person is basically enabled by technology because technology lets them do it completely anonymously without fear of consequence. And it can be everything from harassing text messages to harassment on social media to the worst kind of harassment, which is calling and bomb threats. A kid just got arrested, and I'm glad he's going to get up to 80 years in prison. 80 years in prison. He made over 2,000 bomb threats. And the problem is, for the first 1,999, nobody could track him down. But they caught him. And he's going to be in jail. He got his sentence, 10 years in jail, 20-year-old. He'd been doing it for years. And good. But that doesn't really make it easier for Christina's daughter or all the literally millions of kids who are harassed. As an adult, you can just, you know, brush it off. But as a kid, it really strikes home. And it's unfortunate. The ultimate solution, honestly, is anonymity is what protects people. And while anonymity is really important for things like whistleblowing, it's important to have a way to express yourself, especially in high school, and anonymously, it can also be used to hurt. And this is a real problem. And I think it's up to the phone companies to do the right thing and start making sure that phone numbers are real. Email addresses need to be real. Twitter handles need to be real. Because the truth is, these people are cowards. They're childish cowards, these bullies. And they do it because they can do it without consequence. But if people knew their names, if they could, you know, run the risk of being arrested. By the way, what is happening to Christina's daughter is criminally prosecutable. It's a felony. That child, if caught, faces some severe penalties. But you can't enforce it if you can't catch them. 8888 Ask Leo. Maybe you've got a better solution. I don't know. I'm afraid the real solution, it comes down on the shoulders of carriers who are unfortunately very reluctant to do the right thing. We need to make them do the right thing. The Gizwiz coming up. I want to party with this guy right here. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for many a moon. He's also our personal gizmo wizard, the Gizwiz. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
I'm great. Dick joins us every week with a gadget or a gizmo, something he has found. He has many of them that he has his own gadget warehouse.
I do.
Which he maintains now, at great expense.
Yes, it just went from 400 to 425.
Oh, man.
A month. To store crap. Now, this may end up there one day. Now, your ears are going to perk and he's going to, did he just say that on television? So this is not a man's athletic toy or device, but the name is. It's called the TV Jockstrap.
Okay. I don't know if you can say that on the radio, but all right.
Oh, well, wait. It's for sports people.
Yes.
It is a 2-inch wide, huge elastic belt that goes around the bottom of your flat screen TV to block the scores of games you haven't seen.
What a good idea. They could have called it the spoiler belt, but okay.
Yeah, yes, okay. I know. But I think they'll get a lot more.
Yeah, they're getting attention because of the name. Yeah.
A lot, right. So it has like a plastic belt buckle on it. And I just tried it for laughs. I went over to ESPN and there was no sport event on, but they do have the runner down there with blank scores. And it certainly does block it out.
Good.
Now, the company says this will work on up to a 75-inch TV.
Can I use it on the bottom of my my 24-hour news channel to block what the president's doing?
Yeah, you could. You might need three of them.
Yeah, they're tall.
Yeah, they're tall. You might need a couple of them. $15, $14.99.
They call it the Trump strap.
Yeah. Maybe you could charge $30 for that because people might want it. So it's on Amazon. They're also at TV Jockstrap, but there they relay you back to Amazon where they're the only place selling them. So I think it's a very clever idea. Everybody, when they first hear it, they go, what? And then like you, they go, oh, you know what? I like this. I'm tired of trying to put tape over the bottom of my screen. Yeah, so you'll end up with just a big black bar across the bottom of your screen.
That's perfect. I don't like those crawls anyway. They drive me nuts on every channel.
Yeah, they're annoying. Yes,
you know what I really hate? You're watching Stranger Things or something spooky, and then, you know, Oprah comes out dancing around saying, don't forget to watch my special tomorrow night. It's like, I want a Oprah strap. I want an everything strap. Just block it all. All right. How much is it? $14.99?
$15. Yeah, $14.99.
Go to gizwiz.biz and click the button that says the Gizwiz visits the tech guy. You can read all about it. He's even got a link to an Amazon page where you can buy the TV jockstrap. I love it. Now, Dick has a lot of other things going on at the website. It looks like it, too. You know, he's a regular on World News Now on ABC, so you can see the gadgets he showed there. You can also see the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine for identifying a picture of an unidentified flying gadget, or a UFG, as we call them. If you can, if you can figure out what that is, you might be in the running for an autographed
copy. That's the training paid off.
We only got 2 more weeks, right? This is it.
Yeah.
12 days before the end of the month, and then a winner will be announced and a new gadget will be produced. You can also go there. And there's a ton of stuff. Do you still do Computer America?
I don't.
That's not around anymore, is it?
You know, I believe it is, but I thought, you know, I'm just doing too many shows.
I like it. You call it monthly non-paid lackey fun.
Paid lackey fun. And that was another reason not to do it.
Yes. I'm not your lackey. Gizwiz Garbage and Mad Collectibles. After years of working at Mad Magazine, Dick has a whole bunch of interesting stuff that he's willing to sell for a price. Including, as I mentioned, Good Days and Mad, his wonderful book that I am very proud to have a copy, autographed copy of. Do you autograph it if people buy it from you?
I autograph it to them directly.
Nice.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It is a great memoir of the amazing days.
And it's fat-free.
At Mad Magazine. And it's fat-free. Nowadays, I need it to be carbo-free. Is it carbo-free?
I'll get you a copy.
Peanuts, soy. It's completely hypoallergenic. Yeah, thank you, exactly. Dickie D. Stick around. Okay, the buddy. Giz Fizz coming up on this stream at twit.tv/live. Dick does a great show in the afternoon. Jeff, Los Angeles. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
It's great to talk to you. I love your show.
Oh, I appreciate your listening. Thank you.
Oh, I listen all the time, and what I like is that you teach so many people so many things. It's just wonderful.
Oh, you're bless you. Okay.
I have a laptop that the batteries are going low, and I like to use it in my vehicle. And I am really good with electronics. I'm an amateur radio operator and a broadcast engineer. What I'd like to do is remove the batteries and connect 12 volts to it because the batteries are 11.1.
So you because you know this stuff, you know the difference in AC and DC, and your car's battery is direct current. Normally what people do is they get an inverter.
I have that.
Yeah, and you just plug your laptop into it. But you say, well, why should I bother turning it into AC and then the laptop's power supply turns it back into DC?
Yeah.
Couldn't I just directly connect the battery? That's an interesting question.
They have center taps or taps in between each cell for monitoring the cells. And I think certain models you just could not do what I'm thinking. But I think that if I get lucky and just get the right laptop and remove the batteries, I won't necessarily need those little center tap unless I have to fake it out and tell them that they're there.
So there's a couple of ways around this. Some laptops do have, in fact, DC power adapters. They used to do it on airplanes, remember? So,
I'm thinking about police cars. Like, what do police cars use?
Yeah, exactly. Duracell makes a universal adapter that I think does the same thing. I'm looking at an electronics forum that has some related issues and solutions. I will put that in the show notes at techguylabs.com. You know a heck of a lot more about electronics than I do. So this,
I'll tell you what happens.
Yeah. Honestly, I think you could probably just do it and see what happens. You know, obviously there's some power conditioning going on the laptop, you know, and
I'll just make sure I don't turn on my alternator because I have two batteries.
Well, that's what might be one of the issues is the inconsistency of the power you're getting from that. So that's one reason you'd want some, you know, if you cross batteries, you can keep it at a standard voltage.
Yeah. Or I can put a voltage regulator.
That you might want to do. Yeah. It's an interesting idea. Call us back when you do it, will you?
I certainly will. And it's great to speak with you.
Well, it's great to talk to you. What station do you work at?
I don't work at a station right now. I used to work at a TV station here in LA.
Nice. We won't
need.
Oh, nice. That's great.
That was the best experience of my life.
What's your call sign?
Whiskey Delta 8, Mike November.
I like it. Whiskey 6, Tango Whiskey Tango. 7-3. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, 7-3.
Take care. Leo Laporte, 7-3. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. I love ending with ham radio chatter. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.